Okay, we're holding on Nun Amr Aleph, the third line from the top. We started talking yesterday about two takanas that the Chachamim made in Usha during the couple of decades after the Churban. One, which was how we got into this in the first place, was since we mentioned in the Mishnah that a person doesn't have a choiv to sustain his children, to feed his children, then we said that in Usha they made a takana that you do, and we discussed the pros and cons of that. Then we had a second takanas Usha about that a person gives away all his mechassim while he's alive, that he and his wife are still entitled to live off those mechassim for as long as they're alive. And again, we discussed the pros and cons of that. Now comes the third takanas Usha, probably the most famous of them. Amar Rabbeila, Usha Iskinu, they made the following takana in Usha, Hamavazbez al Yavazbez Yoyse Mechomish. Somebody who's spending money on tzedakah should not spend more than a fifth. Right. So there is, of course, let's first learn through the Gemara over here about what the Gemara actually has to say on this topic, and then we can talk about what it says in Tanya and what it says in various other Rishonim and Achronim on the subject. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in Raisa, I'm a Vazbiz Ali Vazbiz Yosef Mechomish, that a person who's giving away money for tzedakah should not give away more than one fifth. Shemit Tzarech Labrius, because otherwise he may end up needing himself to get tzedakah later. He may need to come on to other people. Tosfos, by the way, quotes from the Yerushalmi that what we mean by Chomish is over here, the first year that a person, I guess the first year that a person has his own household or whatever, he gives a chomish of his total assets. After that, he gives every year up to a chomish, that is. After that, he gives every year up to a chomish of his earnings. Not of his assets, because otherwise it would all be depleted after 5 years.
20% of the assets.
And after that, 20% of the profits. 20% of the earnings every year, yes. Also, our Gemara is saying over here, Ali Vazbez Yosem Mechomish, that the maximum is 20%, but presumably it could be less. The Yerushalmi actually, at the beginning of Peah, it says the other way around, that the Takana was actually that the proper thing is to give a fifth. The Pasha is after tax. What? Yeah. And the Braita continues, a Maisa Be'echad Kavikash Levazbez Yosem Mechomish. It happened, Taka, once that somebody wanted to give away more than a fifth, and his friend didn't let him, Umanu Rabbi Yeshevav. Who was the friend who didn't want to let him give it away? That was Rabbi Yeshevav. Amrilo, or others say it was the other way around. Rabbi Yeshevav was the one who wanted to give away, and his chaver didn't allow him, Umanu Rabbi Akiva. And that chaver was Rabbi Akiva. So basically we have, is it Rabbi Akiva was the one who wanted to give away the fifth, or was it Rabbi Yeshevav? Either way. Okay. Amr of Nachman, V'itamer of Achav Yaakov, Maikra, where is a pasuk that we see that expresses this idea of a chomish? Now, the obvious question is, it's a takana of Usha, it's 1,000 years after chomish. What are we expecting there should be anything about it in chomish? The word is, Maram Shif says, the idea that you should give, that the idea of giving a fifth existed long before takana's Usha. What they did is they made it official that that's the maximum. So where do we...
According to
what Tarius was quote, a fifth of the assets at the beginning and a fifth of the earnings afterwards. From the Yerushalmi. It's a chomish. It's a chomish milagav, what we call a fifth, yeah. They say, by the way, a vort, I think it comes from the Vilna Gaon, that a remez to this is in the pasuk that says ha'oshur lo yaveh, talking about the mach the shekel, the trup on the words ha'oshur lo yaveh are munach revi. Munach So munach means set aside. Revi means four. So it means that even an asher should be four, whatever. But yeah. So therefore, it means that even the asher should be setting aside and keeping for himself four parts, and then the fifth one he can give away. Yeah. It's from a sefer called Kol Yahu, which I think has very luck on the Vilna Gaon. Yeah. There's a lot of little cute bird like that are attributed to the Vilna Gaon that rely on the Torah to teach us something. Another one actually that has to do with Pesach is that on the pasuk by Yemoru with Chayehem, the Torah on that is Kadmav Azla. There's a similar report on that. We know, the Eibishter said to Avram, they're going to be 400 years, Be'eretz Lo Lohem, so why was it cut down to 210? So one reason is because of koshi ashibud, because of how hard the mitzvim worked them. So therefore, we have on vayimorer v'chayeh, they made their lives bitter. Kadma, the Eibishter went ahead the azla and let them go. Yeah. Anyway, So. Amar of Nachman v'teim of Rachba Yaakov, Maikra, what's the pasuk that expresses this idea, that's a chomish? The pasuk says, v'chol asher tijin li, aser, aseren, uloch. So the double expression, aser, aser means a tenth, aseren means another tenth. Question is, I'm going to ask why? V'chol adami sura basra li sura kama. Why? The second tenth is not going to be the same as the first one. If you have $100 and you give 10% of that to tzedakah from Maitha, you're left with 90. Now if you take 10, a tenth of 90 is only 9, so you've only given 19. So maybe the pasuk is implying that the maximum is 19%, where you're getting 20%. Amar Rabashi, it means asrenu lebasra kikama. If that's what the pasuk meant, then it would have said aser aser. The fact that it says asrenu means I will give maaser of it, meaning the same as the first maaser. I'll give a second maaser relative to the original amount that was there before I gave the first maaser. So it'll be exactly the same amount, another 10% of the original amount. So 20% total. But the Shittim Kabetzis brings, by the way, there's a famous support that the Rambam writes that if a person has money to give to tzedakah, instead of giving it all in one lump sum, you should better give it in small increments over time. Okay, the Alter Rebbe points out in a Geras HaKodesh that's when you don't have a neim right there who need it. When they do, that's different. But the basic idea that Rambam says is because this way a person gets himself used to giving tzedakah. Like if you give it in one lump sum, you know, you haven't really accustomed yourself to doing the mitzvah. Whereas when you do it in smaller increments, so therefore the Shittim Kabetzis says that's why the pasuk expresses it like that, after asrenu, that better you should be giving the one-tenth and then another one-tenth rather than all one lump sum, one-fifth, because that way you train yourself more to do the mitzvah. Yeah, right, the Rambam brings it on, Hakol Lufi Rebbe Ma'aseh from Pirkei Avos, yeah. Okay, so what's the deal over here? So I think we're all familiar with the Alter Rebbe mentions in Geras HaTshuva and in a few places in Geras HaKodesh, that this limitation that we're saying over here of chomish is for a person who's just giving tzedakah basically for no special reason, just for the mitzvah. Mashenkin, you have a person that's supposed to fast various fasts for various averes, api kabbalah, and nowadays people don't have the koyach for that, so instead you're supposed to redeem them all with tzedakah. Well, then there's no limit of a chomish, just like if a person wouldn't limit himself to a chomish when it comes to doctor's bills, yeah. So there's that exception to start with. There's a number of other exceptions that Rishonim and Achronim point out to this rule. Among them are if you have actual aniyim on the spot there who need, then there's no limit. There's later on in the Samach when we have the whole discussion, although there's going to be a whole sugya over there about tzedakah with a bunch of the famous stories about tzedakah, the story about Ma'ukva and his wife in the oven, and the story about the Hillel running in front of the rich guy who became poor and now he's running in front of him like a footman, etc. All those famous stories are all there on Samach Zayin. So one of the things the Gemara mentions over there is that before a person dies, he can give away much more than one-fifth of his nechassim to tzedakah. The Gemara says over there that Ma'ukva, I think, gave away half of his nechassim at the end of his life.
Children consider
tzedakah? No, supporting your own children while you're alive, that would... No, you're talking about as a Yerusha? No, that's not tzedakah. No, so a person is allowed to. That's one of the exceptions we're saying over here. When a person's alive, he should limit himself to chomish. With the exception that the author ever mentions and the various other exceptions. But when a person is, before a person dies, he can feel free to give much more than one-fifth away to tzedakah. And we see over there that Ma'okra gave away half. Various other things. One interesting thing that's brought from the Baal Shem Tov is he says, what's the Lashon HaMevazbez? Is it Mevazbez, he says, Meloshin Biza. Not Meloshin wasting, but Meloshin Biza, like taking spoils in war. If a person is giving tzedakah just because like they have to force themselves into it, then fine. Al yivazbez yotzei mechomish. You have to force yourself into it. So fine, limit yourself to a fifth. But if you want to give tzedakah and you're giving it b'leiv shalem, good up to hand, give more. So that's the idea. It would be like Biza, like you're having to grab it away from, like Biza is where you conquer an enemy army and you take spoils from them. It's called Biza. the Baal Shem Tov is explaining, then that Hamavazbiz is like where you're having to like grab it away from yourself to give it to tzedakah, then fine, limit yourself to a fifth. But if you're not, if you feel and you want to give it belay rechava, then give it to hey, give more. Okay, so then we're talking about obviously a person who feels that he's not going to be in the status of Bria in that. Yeah, I mean there's other considerations also. One other thing, I think the Chafetz Chaim wrote a whole sefer about the halacha of tzedakah called Avas Chesed. He discusses a number of these things there. One of them also that he mentions is that maybe this rule of limiting yourself to a chomesh doesn't necessarily apply to expenses that a person needs in order to go learn Torah. We know the famous story with Hillel where he chopped wood every day and all he made was a tatzik, and he gave half of it away to the Shomer Beis HaMedrash to be able to go in and learn. Because to be able to learn Torah is an exception. That's not regular tzedakah. That's a special situation.
How much did he charge? It was pretty cheap.
It wasn't much, but he wasn't making very much. So yeah, so it's all relative. There's also he mentioned another thing, that if a person is really rich, then yes, they can give away more than a chomish. If the whole idea is shalei tzarech labrius, then yeah, if a person is rich enough to be able to give away more than 20% and not being a tzarech labrius, then fine.
And children have no right to object, right?
Yeah. Apparently not. We're saying even when he's passing away, you can give much more. Yeah. Okay. What?
Yeah.
Okay. He has a daughter, I think. I didn't know he has a son. Okay, whatever, yeah. Okay. Okay, so we mentioned so far three takanas of the Chachmei Usha. We had the first one about supporting your children, the second one about the nechassim that were given away, and the third one about tzedakah. The first one we had was a chain of three Amoroyim who said it. Rav Dila said in the name of Rish Lakish, who said in the name of Rav Yehuda Bar Hanina. Second one, we had only two. We had Rav Ila in the name of Rish Lakish. And this one, about Hamavazbaz, Ayyavazbaz, Yosef Machaymish, was just Rav Ila stating in Azavi. So the Gemara points out, Amar of Shimon Ba'ashi, who Shmuis Halalu Mismatos V'Hochos. These reports about Takanas Usha get less and less. First we had three people, then two, and then one. The Simonach, and a way to remember the order of them, Ktanim Kosvu U'Bizizu. Ktanim is a key word for the first one, about the person supporting his children in the Ktanim. Kosvu is a key word for the second one, Akosiv Kol Mechasov. And Bizbizu is a key word for the third one, about Hamavaz Bazayavaz Bazayasim Klemish. Another one, Amr of Yitzchak, Ba'ushe Hiskinu, they made a takana in Usha, Sheyehadim is Gaugulim B'nai Ad Shtei Mes Vishana, that a person should go easy with his son until he's 12 years old. Meaning as far as learning. The general assumption that most of the Mephoroshim make is which is actually what the Gemara is going to discuss over here, is we're talking about if the kid is not into learning. Up until 12 years old, fine, you know, deal with him, manage with him, try to get him gently to, etc. Mikan ve'elach, after that, if by 12 he's not buckling down and learning, yodadim ilachayev, and you get down into his life. What does that mean? Nowadays, yeah, I guess in those days it was different. So what does it mean, yodadim ilachayev? So Rashi says it means, for example, at that point you start ludosid v'ritzua, you start with a srak, and then taking away food, etc. If you have to, yeah. Arshad says a little differently. He says that the vote is if the kid is capable of learning and he's takanas, then yes, that's what it means. Otherwise, yoredim elchayev, he says, has a different meaning. It means if the kid's not cut out for learning, fine. By 12, start teaching him a trade. Start teaching him a job, because he's not cut out for it anyway. So he says, Any? Really? You're telling me that 12? Rav said to Rav Shmuel Bashilas, who was a Mulamed, that was his job. He says, "Betzir mi bar shis loytekabel, a kid less than 6 years old, you should not accept into your cheder, into your class. Bar shis, once he's 6 years old, kabel, accept him. V'sofi leketorah, and give him Torah, and give him Torah like an ox." What does it mean, v'sofi leketorah? Rashi says it means in those days, nowadays I guess when they want to fatten up an ox, they stuff it full of food. That's what it means, like stuff the kid full of Torah, beginning from 6 years old. So six, long before 12. Or Marsha says another possibility also, that it means Sapi like Torah means like you put the yoke of Torah on him, like you put a yoke on an ox that it should get used to doing the work. So we see already from 6 you're doing that. No, you put on a yoke on an ox in order that it should do useful work. In order that it should plow. So he will say.
No, but they're feeding that ox.
Oh, they're feeding the ox in order to shecht it. Okay, fine. But so what do you do with the shechted ox? You're bringing it up to kedusha. You know, it's okay. You want to shecht the kid the Yetzer Hara. I don't know, whatever. But it's a figure of speech. Anyway, so 6, not 12. The answer is ain. Safi like a Torah. Yes, it does mean that you should stuff him full of Torah. But when it comes to actually forcing him to buckle down and learn, not you wait till 12. The very same, or another possibility, like Kasha Halamikra Halamishnah. The two different dates can be one as far as Chumash or Tanakh, and one as far as Mishnah. So there's a lot of complications in this last piece of Gemara, by the way. One of them being, we all know the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, ben Chumash Shanim L'Mikra, ben Esser Shanim L'Mishnah. So what are we saying over here, 6 and 12?
Maybe that's the complete Mishnah by...
So first of all, when we say over here 6 and 12, one second. First of all, the way the Mishnah says it is, Ben Chamesh Shana L'Mikra, Ben Asa Shana L'Mishnah, Ben Chamesh Yisrael L'Gemara. Yeah, first of all, the question is like this. When we say over here, when we're talking over here about 6 and 12, are we talking about the beginning of the 6 years, when the kid has just turned 5 and is now entering his 6th year? Or do we mean when he turns 6 years old? And the same thing with 12. So Tosfos says that it actually means 6 years old. It actually means 6 years old, as we're going to talk about soon about the connection with it between fasting on Yom Kippur. On the other hand, other Rishonim do say that it means even during the 6th year. There's also, for example, the Rambam Bechlal doesn't mention the whole 5 and 10 thing. He just mentions, in the Hilchot Talmud Torah, he mentions our Gemara over here about 6 and 12. One thing is, we know that the 6th parak of Pirkei Avos is all Braises, Shana Chacham Bel Shana Mishnah. There is actually a lot of evidence, and actually we see it in the Rambam Pirush HaMishnayis, that the last few Mishnayis of Perek Hei are also Braises. The last real Mishnah over there is Shivonim Asimitha Shemeru Yemenu Ten Chokhenu B'Sirasecha. That's why it has that over there, because that was meant to be the end of the Masechta originally. Everything after that is Braises. So the Rambam may have held that, okay, it's a Braises, and not necessarily it's a binding, Mashen Kana Mishnah. So therefore we should go based on our Gemara. The Alter Rebbe explains it differently. The Alter Rebbe says the vort is, when the kid is in his 5th year, between 4 and 5 years old, the father starts teaching him at home. The father starts teaching him Chumash and Tanakh at home. The Alter Rebbe actually has a long discussion about the pros and cons of teaching him Nach versus just Chumash. Beginning at 6 is what our Gemara is saying over here. That's when you send him to the Mlamed. And actually, the Rambam doesn't just say 6. The Rambam and the Alter Rebbe mention 6 or 7, which basically means 6 if the kid is strong, 7 if he's not. Then he's starting by Melamed. Nowadays we don't. I mean, nowadays the kids start by Melamedim a little earlier than that, for one thing, because they don't spend as long a day in school as they did in those days. The Gemara talks about I think it's in Bava Basra where there's a sugya about chinuch. Anyway, the Rambam passes it. I don't remember actually what his source is, that the kids are supposed to learn all day and a little bit into the night. Little kids don't do, you know, the pre-1A and first and second graders obviously don't do that nowadays, so therefore there's less of an issue starting them a little younger. Anyway, according to the first answer, we're saying over here that at 6 you start sending him to cheder and start stuffing him full of learning as much as possible, but if he doesn't show an aptitude for it, fine, then, you know, deal with him gently until he gets to be 12, and then if he's not buckling down to it by 12, then you urge him l'chayev, then you start getting tough with him. Or the second explanation that the Gemara is saying over here is that it means that as far as Mikra, you start them off at 6, and there's no Yeridim Elachayev with that at all. Whereas Mishnah, which you're beginning by 10, then okay, you begin with him by 12 and by 10, and by 12, if he's not working on it, then Yeridim Elachayev. To Amar Abaya, because we see that Abaya said that there are stages in these things. Amar Li'ein, my mother, which is his foster mother, told me, Bar Shis L'Mikra, a 6-year-old should be starting to learn Mikra. Bar Eser L'Mishnah, at 10 he should be starting to learn Mishnah. about Tleis, the Tanis and Mesles. When he's 13, he should be fasting Mesles, the whole 25 hours of Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. For a girl 12 years old. Now, Rashi says an interesting thing over here. Rashi says, first of all, so why for a girl earlier? So Rashi says because they don't learn Torah, so they don't get as weak as the boys do. No, we're talking about in general. That in general, Rashi's saying that boys get weak, their bodies get weakened by spending so much time learning Torah. Torah mateshes kol chashaladam. Therefore, girls are stronger. But Rashi says, unlike what we were saying before, that 6 means 6 years old and 12 means 12 years old, like Tosfos, no, Rashi says that actually the 12 year we mean is when a girl is in her 12th year, meaning a year before her bat mitzvah, she already has to fast the full fast. And then so the Marsha points out that evidently Rashi did not have the girsa here in the Gemara about the boy bar tleisar. Because then what Rashi would mean to say is that a girl starts fasting the full fast when she's 11. A boy, not till he's 13. A boy when he's actually bar mitzvah. Before that, he fasts partially, but the vote would be that's why. Otherwise, what is Rashi mentioning the fact that girls are stronger because they don't learn Torah anyway? A girl matures faster than a boy and is bar mitzvah a year earlier than a boy is bar mitzvah. But if you're saying that's what Rashi means, that a girl starts fasting in her 12th year, meaning after she turns 11, and a boy only when Rashi didn't have the gear to hear about a boy, so therefore the Gemara is not saying about that, and therefore you just follow the basic din dar daisa that he starts at 13, and that's the difference. She gets a two-year head start on him, one because she's stronger and one because she matures faster.
12th year for a girl?
12th year for a girl, and only the beginning of the 14th year when he actually turns 13 for a boy. Nowadays, by the way, the typical thing they do is that kids start fasting the full fast, 3 fasts before their bar mitzvah. I actually don't know what the real source for that is. Yeah. Anyway, Tosfos discusses that not necessarily is that what it means. It may mean that we're saying that both a girl and a boy start fasting the full fast 1 year before their bar mitzvah, respectively. That's kind of right. Actually, Tosfos says that no. The Ri and Tosfos says that no. What the Gemara means here is literally 12 and 13, respectively. 12 for a girl, 13 for a boy. So what's the chiddush? I mean, what do we need Abaya's foster mother to tell us that? We know that that's the din. The chiddush is that we don't say before that they should be fasting part of the day. So the halacha is we do. We learned in Yoma that l'maisa, you start being mechanech them to fast part of the day a couple of years before the bar bat mitzvah, and then by the time they're close to their bar bat mitzvah a year before, like we're saying over here, then or some time before, then they're fasting the full thing. Amar Abaya, since we're talking something that Abaya's foster mother told him about the care of children, so here's another one. Amar Eliyim. A six-year-old who gets bitten by a scorpion on the day he turns six, loy chayi, is not going to live. Mayasvase, what do you do to cure him? You take the gallbladder of a white daya. A daya is a kind of tzedek, a bird, a vulture, or some such thing. You mix it in beer. Neshafye, you rub it on the child's skin, or neshafye, and you give him a drink of it. So what are we talking about over here? Rashi says it means, when we say loy chaye, and then we're saying a refuah, right. It means he's not going to live unless you give him a solid refuah, such as this. Tosfos says, no, that's not what it means. Loy chaye means he's not going to live, period. It means this is what you should give him as a preventative, as a vaccine against it, ahead of time, give him this stuff. The difficulty then that various mepharshim point out with Tosfos's shita is we're saying over here a daya is a treif, a bird, right? Mela, according to Rashi, that the kid is in danger, then of course, you know, sakonis nefarshis, you do everything. According to Tosfos, if it's just a preventative, just make sure to keep him away from scorpions on his sixth birthday. Don't give him something treif to drink. A lot of discussion about that point. Another one, Haibar Shata, the Torah Lazy Bura Biyami de Mishlam Shata, a 1 year old who gets bitten by a bee on the day he turns one, also like Chaya, is also not going to live. Maya Svasa, what's the remedy for him? Atsvasa de Dikla Bamaya, you take the ivy that grows around a palm tree, that winds around the palm tree. Bamaya, you mix that with water. Neshakya, you rub it on him, and Neshakya, and you give it to him to drink.
Rub it and drink.
Yeah, well, both things are rubbing and drinking. What the deeper meaning behind these two things is, I haven't found anything, and I searched as much as I could to find anybody who says any deeper meaning to these two things. I mean, we know all over the place in Chassidus that talks about the idea that an akra represents coldness. So maybe there's the idea over here that the person who's gotten bitten by the coldness bug, they have a real problem, and you need serious heroic measures to overcome it. As far as the zibura, various places it talks about the idea that the zibura is the Aramaic word for the tzira, the insect that says in a few places in Chumash that the Eibishter sent the tzira to clear out the Knanim, v'shalachti es tzira lefanecha, v'gersha, etc. In a number of places in Chassidus, there's a couple of Maimarim from the Maimar in Likutei Torah and Parshas Shlach that talks about it, and a few other places that the tzira represents represents basically the ability to get rid of the more dachistic evil that's there. In other words, you have like the more blatant evil that's there, that's the Knanim. On him, and that the Yidden are supposed to deal with, and then there's the more hidden one, the more subtle one that the Tzira is supposed to take care of. So how that relates to all of this, I don't know. But evidently there is this idea that maybe this Tzira mentality is also not so good for a person at times, and you need countermeasures against it.
Only on that one day.
Only on that one day, I guess. Yeah.
Maybe the Shatya and the Shatya means preventive. It kind of means once
said. Well, no, because according to Rashi, it means the whole thing is after the fact, and according to Tosfos, the whole thing is preventative.
So,
I mean, Neshakya would mean that you rub it on him, which is a makif tikka thing, and Neshakya would mean you give it to him to drink, so it penetrates inside, so you deal with it for chitzonius and mipnimius. I don't know. I'm sure somebody who knows more than me on Chassidus could probably put together something on this. Going back to the matter of when you start a kid in cheder, Amr of Tina, kol amachnes es bnei pachas ben sheish. Anybody who starts his child in cheder under 6 years old, rot achra ve'enim magia. He'll end up chasing after the child and never be able to. He'll be chasing after him, like to try to strengthen him, ve'enim magia, and he'll never be able to reach him. The child will always be weak. Ika d'amri, a different version, is chavera rotan achra ve'en magina. I say, on the contrary, it's a good thing to start him early. His friends will always be running to try to catch up with him in learning, and they'll never be able to. Gemara points out, v'tavayu is new. As a matter of fact, both things can very well be true. Cholish v'gomer. The child will be weak v'gashmius, but it'll be a big time chacham. Or another possibility, hadekachish hadebari. They're talking about two different circumstances. One is if the child is weak, don't start him before 6, it'll affect his health. Whereas if he's a strong child, he goes into hate, let him start before 6, and he'll be ahead of all of his peers.
Weak in
physically, yeah. Another takana of the Chachmei Usha, Amar Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina, Usha Hiskinu, Ha'isha Shemachra B'nichsim B'log B'chaye Baila, a woman who sold any of her nichsim B'log while her husband was alive, and then she died, Habal Motzi Miyad Al-Kuchos, the husband is allowed to take away that property from the buyers. Because we talked about yesterday the idea that a woman's husband in her Nechasim is considered like a Lekeach. We said that any property that she owns and brings into the marriage, either nichsim b'log or nichsim tzayin b'arzel, the husband owns, the husband becomes the effective owner of them. In the case of nichsim tzayin b'arzel, he becomes the owner and he has to reimburse her later on. And in the case of nichsim b'log, for the value of them, we figure out. So the nichsim tzayin b'arzel, we figure out the nechasim she brought into the marriage as part of her nadin are worth $1,000. The husband has total control over those nechasim, but if he ever dies or divorces her, then he has to reimburse her that $1,000. Or we learned in Yevamos that if any of the actual kalim still exists, he has to return them, etc.
If she dies, he doesn't pay the kesubah.
Then he gets the nadin. We talked about that the other day. Yeah. That's Nichsa Tzayin Basel, and Nichsa Malug is ones where she maintains ownership of them, but he's entitled to the payers. We're saying, though, because he's entitled to the payers, therefore, the Chachamim made it effectively, he's like he bought them. So now, if she sold some of this property while he was alive, then when while she was alive, then when she dies, the husband is able to exercise his rights. Well, I was the first buyer on it, therefore I can take it away from the later buyers.
Does he have to reimburse anybody?
That's machlokes are showing him whether you have to reimburse them or not.
What's the point of taking it back if he doesn't reimburse them?
Because it still means he's got he got the actual property. It may be a particular piece of land that he wants. The Gemara tells, Ashkech Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef L'Rav Abo, Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef one time met Rav Abo, to have a koi b'uchlusa d'Usha, he was standing in a crowd of people in the city of Usha. Speaking of Usha, Amalei, Man Morad the Shmaita d'Usha, who is the one who taught this din about Usha, this din that we just learned about, Ha'isha Shemach Rav Nichsim Alug? Amalei Rav Yosef Bar Chanina, they told him that's who it was, Rav Yosef Bar Chanina, as we just said. Tonimine Aboin Zimnin, Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef learned it over 40 times from Rav Abo. The dummy lay command manchale bekiste, and then he felt like as if it's put in his pocket, like he knows it's solved. What exactly is it that he learned over and over? So Rashi says he had him repeat to him over and over that it's Rav Yosef Bar Chanina who taught this. So what was the importance of that? So some mafarshim say, I think Maharam Shif maybe says, since we had before Girsa that it was Rabbi Yehuda, then that it was Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina, so he had to like get that out of his brain and then replace that with that it's Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina, and therefore he needed to learn that a whole bunch of times. The other possibility I think Marshall talks about is it means he actually learned the actual din itself over 40 times to make sure that he knows it fully. And then Maram Shif adds, so what are we saying that he felt like it's in his pocket? The Gemara mentions in a few places, in Eilam Matzias, for example, Adam Asir Mashmish Bekisid Kosha. A person has money in his pocket, he's constantly feeling for it. So here also, even though he learned it 40 times from Rav Abo and he really knows it solidly, he kept on like feeling, like I constantly have to review it in my head now to make sure I don't forget it. Pasuk says, Ashri Shomer Mishpat, the happy are those who are careful in judgment, Oisit Tzedakah B'Choleis, who do Tzedakah at all times. So the question is, V'chiyef Shlasa Tzedakah B'Choleis, how do you do something which is Tzedakah all the time, like 24-7? Dorsher Rabbi Senor Shabbi Yavne, V'amri Lo Rabbi Lezer, Zeh HaZon Bonner of Noisef Shem Tanim. This is somebody who supports his children, his sons and daughters, when they're little. So getting back to the original topic of our sugya, a person has a, technically we said he doesn't have a chiyuv to support them after six, except you have takanas osha, and we discussed the pros and cons of whether that's actually chal. A person who does support his children when they're little is oisit tzedakah b'cholis. He's doing a constant tzedakah. That's actually what. One second. Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmeni Omar. Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmeni says, no, that can't be it, because then it's not b'chol eis. Up to six, you have a chiyuv to support them. So you can't call that b'chol eis, that's a constant thing. So no, rather, Zamagadu Yosem Yisema B'sinit Beisir Masiyan. It means somebody who raises a Yosem or Yisema in his house, and all the way until they're ready to be married off. That's b'chol eis. Actually, there's a medrash on Esther, on Esther talking about Mordechai adopting Esther and raising her. The Gilead Ashas brings it over here. That the medrash also discusses this pasuk Oseh Tzedakah B'chol Eis, and it says specifically the Tzedakah B'chol Eis. It's not just having them live in your house. Because let's say, for example, the medrash says they may wake up in the middle of the night and their blanket has fallen off or whatever, they need you to put it back on, and you don't because you're sleeping. It's still not b'chol eis. What's the b'chol eis? The fact that you feed them. The fact that you feed them, that's b'chol eis, because even they're not eating constantly, of course, but the food is always at some time or other in their stomach and nourishing them. So that's a tzedakah b'chol eis.
Yosem only or Yosem also?
Yosem and Yosem, we said, yeah. Incidentally, by the way, this that we just said that a person zonas bonav of noisav kshemtanim that we're saying we're calling it according to the first manda amar, we're saying that's called tzedakah. Does that mean you can use ma'aser for it? There's actually quite a bit of discussion about that among the poskim. Maram Rutenberg says yes, you can use ma'aser money for supporting your children after six, given that we're saying you don't have an absolute chiyuv to. Then yeah, and the Gemara is calling it over here tzedakah. Then yes, you can. The Taz. No, even your own children, because we said Taz on Bonov of Noisav Kshem Tanim. So the Maram Rutenberg says, yes, even your own children, you can use your Maisa money towards that. The Taz argues that very strongly. He says that no, that's not what it means. You can't use Maisa money to do something which is a chayv on you, and here it is to a certain extent a chayv. As we said yesterday, you have a moral obligation to support them above six.
What's it taking away from Manim?
Okay, but that's, you know, I need a chokodman, fine. You know, that's not the real issue. But there's also, by the way, going back to what we were just talking before about learning Torah, about teaching about person tchiyuv of the teacher's children Torah until six, after six, or whatever. There's also, you get into the issue, to what extent can you use mice and money for that? So there also, there's a lot of discussion, and if there's the bare minimum, the Gemara discusses in Kedushin, the bare minimum that a person has to teach his children Torah, that you can't use ma'isa money for, because you have a chiyuv for that. Anything beyond that, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Hilchos Talmud Torah, yes, you can. You shouldn't, maybe, if you're rich, if you can afford otherwise, but the you have the option, if need be. Further on this, another pasuk talking about tzedakah. The pasuk says, "Hein va'osha b'veis." Say a person has wealth and property in his house, but tzedakah menetzlad, and his tzedakah endures forever. So what does this mean? If it means regular tzedakah, how is the hein va'osha b'veis? I mean, eventually it gets used up. So Rav Huna v'Rav Chista, Chad Amar, one says that it means Zaloima Torah Malamda, somebody who learns Torah and teaches it to others, he has the hein va'osha stays by him. But also, if it's a kotze, it's lad, the fact that he taught other talmidim, that lasts forever. And Marsha adds also the comparison is also to two. The comparison is also in two other things. First of all, when a person learns Torah, he gains, and then teaches it to other people, he gains more. He gains more in understanding of it because he taught it. I see that every day. Second of all, he says, "Vortes." Imagine if a person is giving tzedakah, and imagine if a person is being paid to give tzedakah. Obviously, he doesn't get the schar for it. Same thing. When a person is teaching Torah, it also has to be for free. That's the other comparison of that's the other point of comparing it to tzedakah.
At least mikra is free. I mean, they were allowed to get paid for.
Yeah, okay. Technically, you're allowed to get paid for tzedakah. Yeah, okay. The other one said it means somebody who writes out books of Tanakh, and not just Tanakh, but nowadays it means any other sforim that people learn from also, and lends them out to other people. So there also, it's hoin va'osha b'beis, it's in kaseh emet eslah, the books, the zchus of lending out the books, he's getting them back all the time, and the books last a long time, and therefore the tzidkos of it lasts forever.
And with his own money, not my head, right?
That's a whole different question, actually. There are poskim who say that if you're buying books tax for the purpose of lending them out, then you are allowed to use ma'isa money for that.
Is this mitzvah also?
Yes. Another pasuk, what's darshin? The pasuk says, "Arei vanim levanecha shalom Yisrael." You'll see sons for your sons, shalom Yisrael. What's the connection between having grandchildren and shalom Yisrael? I'm Rabbi Shoban Levi. Kiven shabanim levanecha. Once your sons have sons, shalom Yisrael. Then there'll be peace among the Jewish people. Delay also the day chalitza v'yivum, because then you don't have to come to chalitza and yivum. Chalitza first of all involves, as we learned in Yavamah, it involves spitting on the floor in front of the Yavam, which already itself looks like a bit of a fight between them. There's also chalitza and yivum sometimes can be very controversial between them. The Yavam wants the yivum and she doesn't want to marry him and only wants chalitza, or vice versa. So you can have all kinds of friction with that. If you have children, then you avoid all that problem.
Why not just say give them a long life? And why are you saying the roundabout way?
Because that's the point. What's the connection? Why Revanim Uvanacha? Why is that going to cause Shalom Yisrael? Because you won't need Chalitza and Yibum. If you live long, okay, a person lives to be 100, but still, if he dies childless, there's still the, you know.
I mean, why do we have to bring that? We are obligated.
We're saying, what does the pasuk mean? What is the bracha in the pasuk? That when you have Bonim Levanacha, the mila of it is that then you'll have Shalom Yisrael. Yeah, of course you fulfilled the mitzvah, but yeah. Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, another reason, kiven shabonim levanecha, it means when your sons have sons, shalom al dayanim Yisrael, it means that the dayanim of the Jewish people will have shalom. There won't come to be arguments about the Yerusha. You want people won't be arguing who gets the Yerusha ahead, who doesn't, etc. There's an interesting verse that's brought from Rabbeinu Yechiel about this. We find the Gemara describes in Bava Basra, it actually comes from Megillah Tainis, that one of the many disputes that the Chachamim had at one point with the Tzedukim is on a matter of Yerusha. We know the Torah says a person dies, he has sons and the sons inherit him, no sons and the daughters inherit him, like Neis Lachon. What happens also, we know that if the son has died but he has children, then the children inherit in place of their father. What happens, you have a case, let's say, a person had a son and a daughter. The son died and left a daughter, and then you also have a daughter. So you have an aunt and a niece.
So the grandmother gets
So which one gets the Yerusha? The Chachamim say that the Chachamim say the Bas HaBen gets it all because she's in place of her father. This is only a son inherits. Whereas the Tzedukim argue that no, a Bas HaBen shouldn't be any stronger than her aunt, the Bas. They should get to divide it equally. And they ended up having a whole debate about it. I think I mentioned in Bava Basra, eventually, finally, on Chavdala Tevis, they were able to prove to the Tzedukim that they're wrong, and that became one of the Yom Tovim Megillah Sinus for that reason. So the vort is, if you have Banim Levanecha, then there'll be Shalom al Dayani Yisrael. They won't end up having to fight with the Tzedukim about who gets the Yerusha.
What about the fight between the brothers?
No, but still, though, if you have Banim Levanecha, then okay, right. So that's another verse that some of Poshim say. The verse is that if you have Banim Levanecha, if each of your children has the same number of children, then there won't be any arguments because you won't have one is going to say, you know what, I have more children, I should get a bigger chunk of the Yerusha or whatever. If everybody has children, then yeah. The Mishnah said Zed Medrash Dorish Rabbi Lozman Azayah Lifnei Chachamim Chol, that Rabbi Lozman Azayah had darshan that you have a comparison between Ksubas Benin Dichrin, the fact that the male children yarshan the Ksuba and the Nadin, and the support and the Mizonis for the daughters, that both of them only kick in when the father dies. Sigmar tells about this. Yos Rav Yosef Kameder Rav Hamnona. Rav Yosef one time was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Hamnona. The Yosef Rav Hamnona Vakama. Rav Hamnona was sitting and saying the following din. Kishem she'en abonim yoshin ele min hakarka, just as the boys only inherit from land, kach'en abonis nizonis ele min hakarka. So also the daughters only get supported out of the land that the father left as part of the estate. Everybody started making noise. Everybody started yelling out against him. What? The shavik aro the yarsile bone, the shavik aro the yarsile bone. Are you telling me that only somebody who left land as part of his estate, then his sons are going to yarshin him, and if he didn't leave land, then his sons don't yarshin him? Yerusha applies to land then, metalpolin. Amalei Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef said to Rav Hamnona, maybe what the Rebbe is talking about is not regular Yerusha, but specifically this Ksubas B'nin Dichrin business. This that the boys inherit the mother's Ksuba and Nadin or whatever, is they Davka inherit out of land, not out of Metalpolin. So what we would say is, in other words, if the Ksuba plus Nadin, etc., was worth $1,000, so what we do is actually... Rashi explains like this. We have later on in the Masechta, the Gemara explains like this. Suppose a man had two wives, one after the other, or sequentially, it doesn't really matter for our purposes. He had children from each one of them. Each one is supposed to inherit their mother's ksuba, ksubas benin dichrin. What we say is like this. Now, on the one hand, I mean, there's Ksubas Benin Dichrin, fine. On the other hand, there is a din in the Torah that there's supposed to be a Yerusha. What we do is like this. It's called, there's a concept called Moiser Diner. If the estate is large enough that each one can get the value of their mother's Ksuba and Nadin or whatever, and there's still at least one dinner left to be divided among the Yoshim, then you do that. You're able to be Mekayim, the din minatorda, with that dinner, and each of the sets of children gets their mother's ksuba. Otherwise, not. Otherwise not, because otherwise you're taking away the din. Otherwise, you're taking away the din deraisa. So now what we're saying is that ksubas benin dichrin. We're saying sort of Yosef is saying to Rav Hamnona, are you talking about ksubas benin dichrin, which can only be inherited from land? This whole concept that we just talked about of a moiser dinner and all applies if you're inheriting from land. Amalei, so Rav Hamnona tells him yes. Mar de gavra rabahu, you who are a great man, yada mai kamini, you understood what I was getting at, unlike everybody else who didn't understand. And Mefarshim talk, I think the Chassam Sofer talks about what exactly was everybody else thinking. How could they think he's talking about anything except Ksubas Benin Dichrin? So he says that they thought that maybe what is it he said? Actually, you know what? I don't quite remember actually what he said. But whatever, he says they did have some kind of reason to think that he's talking about regular Yerusha, not just Ksubas Benin Dichrin, but Rabbi Yosef clarified that no, he means only that, and not regular Yerusha, of course, applies equally well to Kauka and Metalpolin. Further on this topic of supporting the daughters after the father passes away, Amar of Chiyah by Yosef, Rav zon mechiti dalia. It once happened that Rav ordered that the daughters should be supported out of the wheat from the aliyah. Now aliyah can have the aliyah can so aliyah usually means an attic, like a second floor of a house. So what does that mean? First of all, parnosa havia. Do we now? There's two different things. There's two different things that girls get out of the estate after the father has passed away. Number one is mezonos that we talked about in the Mishnah, that they're entitled to a certain amount every year for their maintenance, for food and clothing and whatever until they're ready to get married. Second of all, you have what's called parnosa, which is the something towards the expenses of their wedding and nadin and whatnot. So when we say that Rav ordered that they should give chitim, which are metalkalim, by the way, from the aliyah, is it Iboilu parnosa habia? Are we saying that he said they should be getting it as parnosa, as going towards their wedding expenses? Umay aliyah me'iluya da'av, and then what would the word aliyah mean? It would mean that you estimate according to the net worth and according to the presumed intentions of the father. Iluya therefore would mean like malin, like we figure out how much the father would have wanted to give. V'chid Shmuel, and then it would be like what Shmuel says, the Amar Shmuel, the Parnasa Shaman Ba'av. When it comes to Parnasa, we look at what the father would have wanted to do. We look at, Rashi says, we look at was he a generous person, was he stingy, etc., and we evaluate it on that basis. Which in that case, then, the point would be, then there's no difference between Metalpilin and Kavra. Then the Parnasa could come equally well from either one. So is that what he meant? Or are we talking about that Rav was saying they need to be supported, their regular support, regular food and clothes and whatnot? And umay aliyah midvarim tovim shenever baliyah. And then what would it mean that he said that it should come from wheat from the aliyah? Doesn't mean the wheat is stored in the aliyah. And doesn't mean aliyah as in we figure out what the father would have wanted. It means rather that the reason why he did it was based on the good thing, on the good takana that the chachamim made in the aliyah, on the second floor of the house. The of Yitzchak Bar Yosef, ba'aliyah hiskinu, on the second floor, the chachamim made a takana, shiur bonus nizonis min ha-metalpilin, that daughters get their support out of metalpilin as well. So not like our Mishnah had said Rav Nuna had said that they only get from Karka, but rather that they get from Metalpilin also. And Aliyah was a common place for people for big meetings like this in those days. We learned in Shabbos that in the Aliyah of Hananya ben Chizki ben Gorin is where they made the famous Yud Ches Dover, the famous 18 things that they passed in like the Shammai against the Hillel. Rabbi Gamliel had in his aliyah the different figures of the moon to interrogate the Edim. There were different times like that when we find that an aliyah was a popular place for this kind of gathering. So at some point, the Chachamim, when they were in an aliyah, made this takana. So is that what it means? Tashma, well, come, let's bring a proof. From another case, Rabbanoi, the brother of Rechiva Abba, had in his hands, he had metalpilin that belonged to Yisomim. And Mepharshim explained that what he had them as he was a trustee, he was an apotropos over these possessions. Also, the Kamei de Shmuel, so they came to Shmuel to say that they should be getting they're still children, but they still should be entitled to be getting some of it given to them. Amalei, and he tells him, Zilzun, okay, you have metalpilin over there, go sell some of them and support them. My lavla mezonim chidur v'ischak v'yesh. Presumably then when he says zun, means that actually we're talking about mezonis, actual regular day-to-day food and clothes, and then it would be like what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef said, that they make this takana and the aliyah that they do get from metalpilin. And the answer is no, not necessarily. No, it may have meant that the Yisoimim, or Yisoimus rather, are coming for Parnasa. They're coming to ask him to withdraw some of the money from the account for wedding expenses. Or Shmuel Latame, and then Shmuel would be going according to his Svara. Because we just said before, as far as Parnasa, we look at what the father would have wanted to do. Tosfos points out, by the way, that the mahalach of the Gemara over here is we assume we assume that Rav and Shmuel we assume that Rav and Shmuel probably hold the same thing. Therefore, that's why the Gemara can be that's why the Gemara can be proving what that's why the Gemara can be trying to prove what Rav meant by appealing to a story with Shmuel.
They do not disagree.
We shouldn't assume that they agree without a good that they disagree without a good reason. Basically, so when it comes to Rabbi Yitzchok Yosef's statement, okay, maybe they hold like him, maybe they don't. But we would assume that Rav and Shmuel hold similarly. Yeah.
That's because.
Basically because the Mishnah itself is saying that they're saying that daughters only get from Karka. So without any good reason, we shouldn't assume that they're agreeing that there was a Sakana of the Aliyah. We should rather say that both Rav and Shmuel are referring to Parnassa, which our Mishnah never talked about. Another case, Hava Uvda ben Hauda. It happened such a case in the Hauda where there was a question of the Yisomim need to be supported, have to be supported out of the estate, and the question was, do we take it out of Metalpolin? The Dun Dayonid in Hauda, the Pumadisa. So the Dayonim of Nahauda judged it in Pumbedisa, but Agbi Rav Chana bar Bizna and Rav Chana bar Bizna paskin that yes, you do take from a Talpulin to support the Yisomim, like what Rabbi Yitzchok bar Yosef had said, the Sakanas Aliyah. However, Amalahu Rav Nachman, but Rav Nachman tells them no, Zilu Ahadru, go return it, undo your psakdin, and then get it returned. The Eloi, and if not, then I'm going to hold you responsible. Magbinu l'chula apad naichu minaichu. I will take away your mansion from you to pay the debt. Well, that's a strong way of saying, in other words, that you're going to be on the hook for it. Now, why is that? Because Tosfos explains like this. You have the Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin a bit of detail. In what cases do we say that a dayan who made a mistake in a psakdin? What are the various possibilities? So there's a case called Toya B'dvar Mishnah where the Dayan makes a mistake. He forgets or whatever, something that explicitly says in a Mishnah, and then the din is choyzer, that the whole psak din is considered invalid. You return everything to the way it was, and you start all over again. As opposed to this called Toya B'shikol Adas, where you made a mistake in something that depends on logic and on weighing the opinions of the different mandamers or whatever, where there we say in certain cases, where we say that the sack stays as it is, whoever has money keeps it or whatever. In certain cases, the Dayan himself has to reimburse the one who it was wrongly taken from. Over here, Rav Nachman is telling Rav Chana bar Bizna that this is effectively Toya B'dvar Mishnah. What you did to take away from Metalpolin is the equivalent of forgetting something that it says in explicit Mishnah or Mishnah. And therefore, so Tosfos continues. Rav Nachman is saying like this. Now, I could go and tell these Bala Dinim that we have to undo it and go back to the way we were and start all over again. But they may not listen to me. You were the Dayan on the case, so you're responsible for making sure that it gets undone. And if you don't, then you're going to be responsible to reimburse them. Another case, Rav Ami and Rav Asi thought that the Yisomim should be supported out of Metalpolin. Rav Yaakov Ba'edi tells them, what, Milsa de Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokish, Le'ovda Ba'ovda, something that Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokish, who are Rabbeim, never actually paskin that way. After Abdin Ba'ovda, you want paskin that way. Don't take that on your shoulders.
About Metalpolin,
yeah. We mentioned yesterday, by the way, that later on, after all of this, after the times of the Gemara, early in the times of the Gaonim, they made a takana that all chovus can be collected equally well from the Talpulin as from Karka. So therefore, what we're saying here in the Gemara is the original din of the Gemara. Afterwards, the halacha nowadays is that there's no real difference in Karka and Metalpulin as far as these halachas.
Because
there came a point when most Jews didn't own land anymore. Yeah.
So what about in Israel now? Okay,
well, once the takana is made, it's a posh to b'chol Yisrael, then yeah. Another case, Rabbi Elazar Sovel Amazin Metalpolin. Rabbi Elazar thought that the Yisomim should be supported out of Metalpolin. Amar Lefan of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochim, Rebbe, Yedea Ani B'cha Shein Midas Adin Atah. I know that what you're doing is not really technically according to the strict din, El Midas Rachmanus. You want to do it out of Rachmanus on the Yisomim, and maybe not even to force the person to do it, but maybe just to convince him, like we talked about yesterday. Ella, but even that don't do Shema Yira. Talmidim Yikbu Allah Lederis, because the Talmidim may see that and decide the halacha. They may misunderstand and think that that's really the actual technical halacha that the Yisayimim are entitled to Metaklin, and they're not. Another case, Ahuda also the commander of Yosef, a case like this came to Rabbi Yosef, Amalavu, when he told them, Havulah mitamri da'al budya, go give this Yisoma, who's asking for maintenance, for money, for food and clothes, go give her out of the estate dates that are on the mats. They used to in those days the usual thing was, yeah, when they picked dates off the trees, they would put them on mats for a while to dry. And then they'd collect them off the mats and be able to store them for a while. Tamri dal budya is metalpalin. Amalei Abaya. When they're fresh, they're...
After you pick them. Probably the pick them is still hard.
That may be. Okay, so maybe they soften, whatever it is, but eventually, yeah. Okay.
You dry them after you pick them.
Yeah, okay.
Not hard.
Okay, Ryan.
Fresh, soft.
Okay, whatever it is. Anyway, the point is they would keep them on the mats for a while to soften, to ripen, to dry out, whatever it is exactly. But the point is that's metalpalin. Amalei Abaya, wait a minute. Ilo bal chayv hava ki hav gavna mi hava yoiv leimar. What? Even if it was a regular bal chayv, a bal chayv is not entitled to collect from metalpalin. He can collect from metalpalin, but not from metalpalin of Yisoimim. Here, the estate belongs to the Yisoimim. Yisoimim are even weaker than a regular Baal Chayv. We said yesterday that they're not even entitled to collect from Nechasim Meshabodim, from even from land that was previously sold. So they're even weaker than a Baal Chayv who was able to do that. Why are you saying that they should be entitled to collect from these dates? Amalei, Rabbi Yosef tells him, you're right. Dechazil abodiyakam. Now, I don't mean that the dates are actually on the mat now that they were already picked. I mean they're already ready to be picked and put on the mat, but they're still attached to the tree. So they're still kavka. So if the Gemara asks, still, kol ha'omer ligzeis kegozer dami, don't we say that anything that's going to be harvested is as if it's already harvested? It's Tosus explains that it's actually a machlokes of Rameyer and the Chachamim in Shavuos about it has to do with the question of whether you swear a Shavua on a claim like this, where you have dates that are about to be picked but they're still attached to the tree. Do we consider it kauka and you don't swear on claims involving kauka, or is it metalpalin because they're already ready to be picked and therefore you do? So the Chachamim say over there. So Rav Meir over there holds. Rav Meir holds over there that it's considered as if they're already picked, and we're assuming that we have that basis. The answer is ditzricha l'dikla kamina. Okay, but what we're talking about over here, it's not the dates still need the tree. They haven't quite finished growing yet. They are about ready to be picked, and like you said, they could finish ripening on the mat. But if they stay on the tree, they still will continue to grow over there. So therefore, they're not. It's not yet kalaimid ligzos. It's not yet something that's about to be picked, and therefore, yes, it can be considered like that.
Right. Stop to grow then.
That then it would be considered kugalzus dummy. Then it would be considered like it was picked already.